Okay, well, what I will do, of course, after that is to say the words you already know. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's chapter 6 of the book of Shemot, or Exodus, actually about the second verse. Not the same as the first, but it is a verse we're going to see repeated all the time, and that introduces the Torah portion this week. So the last verse in last week's Torah portion is Yehoshua spoke to Moshe, and he said these words, literally immortal words, words that are so key, and words that set up not only the rest of this particular parsha, but the rest of the story, the rest of the whole book. And it is, it's something I want to make sure we emphasize as we go through here. It says, Ani Yehoah. He is going to say this over and over again in about every context. And I appeared is the first verse that's officially part of the portion. And, of course, and I appeared in Hebrew is Vayera. That would be the first unique word in the portion. Of course, that then is the name of the portion, Vayera. So, and I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Yaakov as El Shaddai. Now, the English says God Almighty, but El Shaddai is the real name that was used there. And the all-sufficient one, I like that translation at least as well as God Almighty. But then he says something which is interesting, fascinating even, a bit problematic, sometimes confuses folks because it doesn't seem like it's quite correct. And here is where we'll quote Rashi and some inside baseball or inside Hebrew. But he says the following, but by my name Yahuwah, I did not make myself known to them. Now, there's a couple ways to render this in English. What's interesting is in Hebrew, the word is the phrase there is lo nodati. Okay, yada. We recognize that root word in there. Yada is known, right? Or know, to know something intimately. Yodati, that's me. That's the personal form. So I did not. Lo, I didn't. This did not happen. Did not. Make myself known to them. Now, what Rashi points out is there's another way this would usually be said in Hebrew, which is lo hodati, which means, I didn't let them know that name or something akin to that. And that is not what is being said here. In other words, he's not saying they never heard this name. They did, in fact, hear the name. If you look, you'll see that Abraham was told explicitly, Ani Yehoah, so was Yitzhak. In the book of Genesis, and as anybody with a concordance or an online search tool can check out pretty quickly, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, his name, appears 165 times in the book of Genesis. So it's not that his name was unknown, it's that by my name Yahuwah, I did not make myself known to them. Well, what does that mean? And the answer, we are going to see. All right, I've also established my covenant with them, to give them the land of Canaan, a land of their sojournings wherein they sojourn. And moreover, I have heard, I've been listening, to the groaning of the B'nai Israel, whom the people of Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, keep in bondage. And I have, the root word here is zakar, to remember or bring to mind. I have brought to mind my covenant. It's not like he ever really forgot it, but it's time. And now it is front and center. So therefore, he says, I say unto the B'nai Israel, oh, wait a second. Now, this is another one of those really key passages. It's going to show up in places like the Passover Seder in the Haggadah, but or some say the Haggadah. But in any case, these are also called the four I wills. And they're important. And as you'll often see pointed out by the sages, these I wills kind of are an escalating or a temporal process. In other words, there's an order to them. And they happen in order. So he says what first? Ani Yehoah. Well, clearly. Ani Yehoah. And I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. So step one, get them out of there. And I will deliver you from their bondage. So the deliverance, obviously it happens after bringing them out. And it sounds like this is somehow a process that is maybe psychological or an understanding of what has happened. And we're going to see that's the temporal thing that continues here. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. And then finally, I will take you to me for a people, an Am, and I will be you, Elohim, and you shall know, Ki Ani Yehoah Eloheke. Elohekem, this is the plural form. Your God, y'all's God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land, concerning which I lifted up my hand to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for a heritage, Ani Yahuwah. So all of this sounds very key, very fundamental, very important. There is a process here of a deliverance and a making free and then essentially taking us, them, to be a people, and you shall know that I am. Okay? So Moshe, it says, spoke so unto the B'nai Israel, but they didn't listen. They didn't hearken to him because of impatience of spirit and for cruel bondage. They would say, hey, we got other things on our mind. So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, look, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the B'nai Israel go out of his land. Moshe spoke before Yahuwah, and he said, look, behold, the children of Israel haven't hearkened to me so far. What makes you think they're going to listen now? How will Pharaoh hear me too? Who am I? I'm of uncircumcised lips. So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, and he gave them a charge for the children of Israel and for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And then it says the following. This is like an aside here. We're going to get a restatement of the name. So here are the heads of the fathers' houses. And I'll go through this reasonably briefly because this is a portion that's got so much in it. I encourage folks to read it and to familiarize yourself. Of course, we have the names of the 12 tribes and the heads of the houses at this time of those tribes. First, the sons of Reuben, firstborn of Israel, Hanoch, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These, it says, are the families of Reuben. Then we have the sons of Simeon, Yemuel, and Yamin, and Ohad, Yakin, and Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman. These are the families of Simeon. And then the names of the sons of Levi, according to their generations. Now, these names we're going to hear a lot of them again, but these are particularly important, of course, because they are going to be the ones that are assigned the temple service later on. Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And now we're going to get one additional fact, the years of the life of Levi, 137. And not only that, we're going to get the grandsons here, the sons of Gershon, Libni and Shimei, and the sons of Kohath, Amram, Itzar, and Hebron, and Uziel. The years of Kohath, one of those, were 133 years. The sons of Merari, Mahli, and Mushi. These now are the families of the Levites, according to their generations. And we're going to see in a second, because we're talking about the genealogy that leads to Moshe, of course, why some of these years of the life are important and how the pieces fit. Amram, took Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife. And she bore him, Aaron and Moshe. The years of the life of Amram were 137 years. Sons of Itzar were Korah, Nepheg, and Zikri. Sons of Uziel, Mishael, Elzaphan, and Sithri. And then on to Aaron. He took a wife. Her name was Elisheba, the daughter of Aminadab. She was the sister of Nachshon, and he took her to wife. And she bore him, we know these names too, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. And I've got a note, a parenthetical note in my margin here, that we know a little bit about the characteristics of Nachshon, and it sounds like her sons, the sages say, carry some of the traits of Nachshon. They were bold, and they were leaders, but they were also maybe a bit tending towards impetuousness. Sons of Korah, Asher, Elkanah, and Abiasaph. These are the families of the Korahites. Eleazar, Aaron's son, took to him one of the daughters of Putiel to wife. She bore him a fellow whose name is also going to appear in Scripture, a very important player. This would be now the grandson of Aaron. His name, Phinehas in the English, or Pinchas in the Hebrew. These, it says, are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites, according to their families. And these are they that Aaron and Moshe, to whom Yahuwah said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt, according to their hosts. These are they that spoke then to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring out the B'nai Israel from Egypt. And they are, in fact, Moshe and Aaron. So we've got a lot of detail on their family tree. And notice we don't get the rest of the whole list here, just these first few. Came to pass on the day when Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, there in the land of Mitzrayim, Yahuwah spoke, and he said, Ani Yahuwah, go and speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I tell you, all that I speak unto you. So Moshe then, he said it again before Yahuwah, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. How shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? We're going to get the answer. And we're going to see that this too is part of the bigger puzzle, or if you will, things that are being laid out. And it's key to the character of the Creator, and that literally is what we're talking about. All of these things are essentially one and the same. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, look, I have set you in the stead of Elohim to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother shall be your prophet. So it's not that you are, in fact, a god or anything of the sort. It's just that I have, because I'm speaking through you, I have put you in this place to speak to him as if that was the case. And Aaron is your prophet. You will speak all that I command you, and Aaron your brother will speak unto Pharaoh that he should let the B'nai Israel go out of his land. And I, in fact, now this is interesting, and it's also not just part of the picture here. It's fundamental, and it's one of those things people argue about, and I would say misunderstand a lot. So as we go through this, I will spend a little time talking about some of the key elements of this. Okay, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. So Yahuwah knows the end from the beginning. Notice, though, he says, I will do this, but he does not do this right off the bat. He's going to give Pharaoh a chance. So don't ever think that Pharaoh did not have a choice in this. He does. And I'll multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh, here he says that he knows what's going to happen. Pharaoh ain't going to listen. He will not hearken unto you. And I will lay my hand upon Egypt to bring forth my hosts, my people, the B'nai Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And here we go. It's going to be so thorough that it says the Egyptians too. They shall know, ki ani Yahuwah. When I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt, and I bring the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, out from among them. So Moshe and Aaron did so, as Yahuwah commanded them. Well, that's what they did. And at this point, now this is fascinating too, Moses, it says, was 80 years old. Aaron, he was 3 years older. He was 83 when they spoke unto Pharaoh. So pause just a second here. This is always, on the one hand, folks, this is kind of interesting, and it should be kind of comforting. Because we oftentimes think that, well, you know, a guy that's 80 years old, he's a has-been, he's washed up, he not got much left in him. And the answer is hardly. Moses is just getting rolling. The most important part of his life is just now beginning. Matter of fact, the part that is going to be recorded for all eternity in Scripture has just begun. And I like to think of his life, because it's 120 years, in three stages. You got the first 40 years, he's learned about Egypt, learned about the laws and customs of that land. Next 40 years, he's out in the boondocks learning how to tend sheep. And I've always thought if there was ever a metaphor for how to be prepared for what Elohim has planned, that's got to be it, right? 40 years tending sheep. And now, after that, he is ready for another 40 years, as it turns out. So Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe and Aaron, and he said, when Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, show me something, show me a sign or a wonder, well, then you will say unto Aaron, take your rod, cast it down before Pharaoh, that it would become a serpent. Now, this is an interesting word. In this case, it's not lachash. The plural is, it's a tani or tanin in the plural. So this is a slightly different word than nakash. This is a slithering thing that we might think of as a snake. Now, Moshe and Aaron went into Pharaoh. Notice that doesn't tell us how they accomplished this. They went right smack in to see the king. Obviously, their path was made straight. Let's put it that way. So they did so, as Yahuwah commanded. Aaron did exactly what he was told. He cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his serpents and before his servants, and it became a serpent. Pharaoh did this. He called his wise men. He said, hey, see if you can match that. His sorcerers, his necromancers, some renderings will say. And they too, the magicians of Egypt, well, they did in like manner with their secret arts. Every one of them cast down his rod, and it became a serpent. And we've seen it in the movie, right? It was kind of impressive. I remember as a kid watching Cecil B. DeMille's to the Ten Commandments, and wow, that made an impression. They became serpents, but Aaron's rod ate them all up, swallowed every one of them. So I guess he wins the encounter. But here's the key. It says, Ve-yach-zach. That word, we recognize it, kazach, be strong and of good courage, and was hardened. Lev of Pharaoh. Lev is heart. So, and was hardened Pharaoh's heart. Sounds like Pharaoh did it. It didn't have to be done for him. He did it. He did not hearken unto them as Yahuwah had spoken. So the key here is all of these words get translated into English as they hardened his heart. But it turns out that what we're going to see as we go through here is that there are two different Hebrew words, very different connotations for what is happening. And in all of the first cases, Pharaoh does it himself. So he strengthens his heart. He makes his heart strong. He's not going to listen. And we're going to see there's another word that gets used as well. So, Yahuwah said unto Moshe, Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. Now, there's the other word. And that word here is kabod. His heart is not just kazak, it's kabod. It's stubborn. And, right, there's a difference between those words. He refuses to let the people go. Now, he interprets it this way. I made my heart strong because I'm a lion heart. And as far as the Creator's concerned, no, you're a stubborn heart. So, go into Pharaoh in the morning when he goes out to the water. So, he'll stand by the river's bank, and you go meet him. And that rod that you used to turn into a serpent, now you take it in your hand. And this time, interestingly, the word is nechash. And I've always thought that's kind of fascinating. So, are they synonyms, or are they just parallels here, and there's a slightly different implication? I can't help but think there's more to this, but I'm honestly not sure what. Anyway, the rod that was turned into an akash, he says, now take it in your hand, and go and you say to him, Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, has sent me to you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. And behold, hey, you haven't been hearkening. You have not shamarred up until now. You haven't listened and obeyed. It's not just enough to listen. You got to obey. Thus says Yahuwah then, in this you shall know, here we go. And here is, folks, where things are really going to come to a head, and we see the theme of the whole book. Thus says Yahuwah, in this way you shall know, ki ani Yahuwah. Behold, I will smite with the rod that's in these my hand, this very hand, upon the waters which are in the river, and they will be turned into blood, dam. The fish that are in the river, they're going to die, and the river will become foul, and the Egyptians won't want to drink it, any water from the river. So Yahuwah said to Moshe, say to Aaron, take your rod, stretch your hand out over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, over the streams, the ponds, the pools, everything that's water that they got, that they might become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in the vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. So is this a chemical reaction? Well, anything that wasn't even touching the rivers or the waters, still, even in vessels, they turned to blood. Moshe and Aaron did so, as Yahuwah commanded. He lift up the rod, he smote the waters in the river, in the sight of Pharaoh, and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. Fish, they died. The river became foul. Egyptians couldn't stand it. They couldn't drink the water from the river. The blood was throughout all of the land of Egypt. And the magicians of Egypt, they said, well, can we do that? In their secret arts, they managed to accomplish the feat, which helped Pharaoh to harden his heart. So Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And in this case, again, the word there, the root word, has to do with kazak. It was made strong. He didn't hearken, though, and that was exactly as Yahuwah had already said he knew was going to happen. So Pharaoh turned around, he went in his house, and neither, it says, did he lay this, even this, to his heart. So he has seen some pretty miraculous stuff, and he's not paying attention, not the kind of attention he needs to. So all the Egyptians, they dug around the river looking for water, but they couldn't find anything that was drinkable. 7 days were fulfilled, and after that, Yahuwah had smitten the river. And finally, he said to Moshe, you go on into Pharaoh, and you say to him, this is what Yahuwah says. Let my people go, that they might serve me. And if you refuse to let them go, just wait. I am this time going to smite all your borders with zephardim, with frogs. And a river's going to swarm with frogs. You're going to be sick of frogs. They'll come up. They'll come into your house. They'll come into your bedchamber. They'll be on your bed. They'll be in the house of your servants, upon the people. They'll be in your ovens and your kneading bowls. Man, what a mess. Frogs are going to come upon you, upon the people, and upon all your servants. Sounds fairly gnarly. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, all right, say to Aaron, stretch forth your hand with that rod over the rivers, the canals, the pools, and cause frogs to come upon the land of Mitzrayim. So Aaron did so. He stretched out his hand over the waters. Frogs came up. They covered the land. Magicians, can we make more frogs as if we don't have enough? Let's try. Magicians did using their secret arts. And look, we can make even more frogs. I'm sure everybody was thrilled to have more frogs. Pharaoh then called for Moshe, and Aaron, and he said, entreat Yahuwah. In other words, go and pray to your God. And he uses the proper noun, go entreat Yahuwah. And he said, take away these frogs from me and from my people, and I will let your people go, that they might sacrifice unto Yahuwah. Now, wait a second. That was pretty easy, wasn't it? He hadn't even gotten through the second plague yet, and he's already caved. Turns out it's not going to be quite so easy, and again, there has been a clue given, and we're going to see how this plays out. Moshe then said to Pharaoh, look, have you this glory over me? Let me ask you this question. What time would you like the frogs to go away? Right? What time should I entreat for you on your behalf and for your servants and for your people that these frogs would be destroyed from you, from your houses, anything that is here, and the only place they'll be left will be in the river? So Moshe is giving Pharaoh a chance to see yet one more wonder, and this is where Pharaoh makes a fatal mistake. There's a logical explanation that people have presupposed is going on here, because Pharaoh thinks that this is a magic art, right? Some kind of an incantation. Maybe it's a natural thing. This is what modern pseudoscientists would say. Oh, they're going to go away anyway, and Moses knows it. So he's asking me, what time would you like them to go away? And that means that he knows they're going to go away real soon. So I'll fox him. I'll say, not right away. How about tomorrow morning? So that's what he says. Against tomorrow. Tomorrow morning. Let's do it then. Now, if you recall, this is where we get the lovely song that everybody's probably heard, One More Night with the Frogs. And it's a funny song, but it's a funny way to think about it. Right? Are you sick of the frogs? When would you like the frogs to go away? Oh, tomorrow morning is good enough. Well, no, honestly, he's probably actually wishing they would go away immediately. But rather than admit that he is given this option, and he thinks he can one-up Moshe, he's willing to spend one more night with the frogs. Okay, so here come the fatal response. As Moses says, and by the way, this is not the only time he's going to say this. He's going to use this against Pharaoh more than once. All right, according to your word, you asked for it, you got it, so that you may know that there is no one like unto Yahuwah, our Elohim. You think you can play fast and loose? I wasn't kidding you. You said it. That's what you're going to get. So the frogs, they'll depart from you and your houses and your servants and from your people. They'll remain in the river only, tomorrow morning. So Moshe and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moses cried unto Yahuwah concerning the frogs, which he brought upon Pharaoh. And Elohim did, according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out of the houses, the courts, and out of the fields. And they gathered them up in heaps. Imagine heaps of stinking frogs. Yep, so many that the whole land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite now in the morning, guess what? He hardened his heart. Now, this time, he did the kabod thing. He made his heart stubborn. So Pharaoh hardened, he stubbornized his own heart, and he did not hearken to them, as Yahuwah had already said was going to happen. So he changed his mind. He lied. He went back on his word. Anyway, Yahuwah then said to Moshe, okay, here's what you're going to do. Say to Aaron, stretch out your rod, smite this time the dust of the earth, the afar, so that it might become gnats, or kin. Kin is the word here. Little teeny bugs, lice, noceums, gnats. There are some different renderings for these words, but the point is these are noxious little teeny bugs so small you almost can't see them, but oh boy, you can feel them when there's billions of them throughout all the land of Mitzrayim. So they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod. He smote the dust of the earth, and there were gnats everywhere. Upon man, upon beast, all the dust of the earth became gnats throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, this time, let's see if we can't get it. Get some more gnats, again, as if we don't have enough. The magicians, the necromancers, the sorcerers, they tried. They used their secret arts. More gnats. That's what we want. They couldn't do it. Still, though, there was enough. There were gnats on every man and upon beast. They failed. And this time, so here's yet another of the major elements of the story that are playing out. This time, the magicians, they got it. This is some powerful juju. Magic we can't understand. And not only that, they went one step further. This, they said, is the very finger of Elohim. This is a real one. We're dealing with a real real L here. And what? Pharaoh's heart was kazach. It was made strong. He didn't hearken to them as Yahuwah had spoken. So Yahuwah said to Moshe, rise up early. When? In the morning, right? Stand before Pharaoh when he comes forth the river. Say to him, thus says Yahuwah, let my people go so that they can serve me. Otherwise, if you won't let my people go, behold, this time I'm going to send swarms. And swarms of what? Arov is the Hebrew word we're going to see here. But sometimes this term arov is literally just translated as swarms. So swarms of what? Well, usually it's understood to be flies, but some other kind of noxious bug. Swarms of them, though. Upon you, your servants, upon the people, upon your houses, the houses of the Egyptians, they'll be full of swarms of these flies or whatever they are, bugs, and also the ground, wherever they are. They're going to be everywhere. And I will this time, it says, sever. Now, here is another major change. So, on the one hand, at this point, at the swarms of flies, after this time of the gnats, we see a couple of major transitions. One, the magicians get it. Two, I will sever. I will set apart in that day the land of Goshen, where my people are. And I will separate that so that no flies will be there from the part where the Egyptians all are, to the end that you may know that I am Ki Ani Yahuwah in the midst of the earth. Now, here comes the other really major transition in the plagues at this point. The word here is pedut, usually rendered, and it's a division, a demarcation, a barrier. I'm going to put a division between my people and your people. And guess when? Tomorrow. That's when the sign will be. So Yahuwah did so, and grievous swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, his servants' houses, in all the land of Mitzrayim. The land was literally ruined by reason of these swarms of flies. Moshe then, he hears from Pharaoh, along with Aaron, and he says, go, go and sacrifice to your Elohim in the land. And Moshe said, you know, it's not meet that we should do so. We need to sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to Yahuwah our El. If we do that, won't the Egyptians stone us? They'll think it's an abomination. We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to Yahuwah our El as he shall command us. Pharaoh says, wait, here it is again. It sounds like he's caved. His heart wasn't made stubborn or kazak enough. I'll let you go, he says, so that you may sacrifice to Yahuwah in your wilderness. But now he's going to play games again. Just don't go too far away and ask him about that. Entreat that's okay. Moshe said, behold, I'll go out from you, and I'll entreat Yahuwah that the swarms of fly may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, his people, tomorrow. Only, just don't let Pharaoh deal deceitfully anymore. We've had enough of your going back on your word and not letting the people go to sacrifice to Yahuwah. So Moshe went out, and he entreated Yahuwah as he had said he would. And Yahuwah did, according to the word of Moshe. He removed these swarms of flies from Pharaoh, all his servants, people. Not one remained. Guess what? Pharaoh stubbornized his heart. He made it kabod this time too. He didn't let the people go. He could be he's a king. He could be a president. He could be a congress critter. He goes back on his word. He seems to have everything it takes to be a politician. Today, yesterday, tomorrow, certain things never change. Nothing new under the sun. All right, then chapter 9. Now, this is the final chapter and the final set of the plagues we're going to see for this first part of the three sets of three plus one. Yahuwah then says to Moshe, go into Pharaoh and tell him, thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, let my people go so they may serve me. Because if you refuse to let them go and you'll still hold on to them, behold, the hand of Yahuwah is upon your cattle, which are in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, the herds, the flocks, and there is going to be a really grievous thing happen, a moraine. And Yahuwah, again, is going to put a wall of separation, a division between the cattle of Egypt and the cattle of Israel, and there will be nothing die of any that belong to the B'nai Israel. So, Yahuwah, again, appointed a set time. Anybody want to guess? Tomorrow, Yahuwah will do this thing in the land. And on the morrow, he did, exactly as he'd said, and all of the cattle of Egypt died. But of the B'nai Israel, not one. Pharaoh said, "Behold, there was not so much as one of the cattle of the Israelites dead." But it says here, the heart, the lev of Pharaoh was kabod. It was stubborn, and he didn't let the people go. So Yahuwah this time said to Moshe and unto Aaron, "Take yourself handfuls of soot from the furnace, and let Moses throw it heavenward in the sight of Pharaoh." He's going to watch and see what you do. "That dust shall become small dust, and it'll spread over all the land of Egypt, and it'll end up being boils breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast throughout all the land of Egypt." Okay, think of it as like whole body hemorrhoids or something. Blains, boils. Sounds pretty unpleasant. They took the soot of the furnace. They did what they were told. They stood before Pharaoh, threw it up towards the heaven, and it became a boil, breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast. Now, the magicians this time around, doesn't sound like they could duplicate it, but the reason was because they were dealing with their own boils. They couldn't even stand before Moshe because the magicians were covered with boils, and all the Egyptians indeed were. So now, after five examples of essentially what can be done, and having had Pharaoh decide to make his heart strong and then finally stubbornize it too, this time Yahuwah takes over. So he has had his chance, and that chance is now behind him. His die is cast, all right? A friend of mine likes to say, it's kind of like dancing with the bear. You decide to dance with the bear, and you've made your bed. You're going to lie in it. The bear decides when the dance is over. And that's where we're at. So Yahuwah this time, for the first time, he now makes Kazakh. He strengthens Pharaoh's heart so that Pharaoh doesn't cave, because he obviously knew Pharaoh had about had it. He would have caved on his own. And he did not hearken to them, though, after that, as Yahuwah had spoken unto Moshe. So Yahuwah this time says unto Moshe, "Rise up early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh, and say to him, Thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, Let my people go, that they may serve me. For this time around, I'm going to send all my plagues upon your heart." The word is there, lelev, literally upon your hearts. And some renderings say upon your person. This is gonna hit really close to home. Upon your servants, upon your people, so that you may know there is no one like me, nothing like me in all the earth. Now surely now I'd put forth my hand and smitten you and your people with pestilence, and you'd been cut off from the earth. In other words, I have given you your chance, but in very deed for this cause have I made you to stand, to show you my power. So you want to know why your heart has been strengthened? Because now, now you're going to see. Now you're in. You're in for good. "To show you my power, and that my name, Shemi, might be declared throughout" what? "Kol ha'aretz." Be'kol ha'aretz. Throughout all of the earth. One more time. What we're seeing here clearly is this is about his name being declared. And again, the fundamental understanding, Ani Yahuwah, I am. Remember, by this name, I did not make myself known unto the patriarchs, Abraham, to Isaac, and to Yaakov. But now, now he is making that name known. He is demonstrating something. And that's part of the fundamental truth that's being played out here. So, as you exalt yourself yet against my people, why won't you let them go? Behold, tomorrow about this same time it's going to rain. I'm going to cause a very grievous hail. Such has not been seen in Mitzrayim since the day it was founded up until now. So therefore send, hasten. I'm giving you a warning, in other words. Bring in all your cattle, everything you have in the field. Every man and beast that's out in the field, when this happens, they're going to die. Anything that's not inside, he's in a whole heap of trouble, and they will die. He that feared the word of Yahuwah among the servants of Pharaoh. There were people listening, right? When Moshe speaks, people listen, like the old E.F. Hutton commercial. Only this time, the word of Yahuwah is obviously a lot more important than a TV ad. Those that are understanding, those with eyes to see and ears to hear, are saying, yeah, I'm starting to get the message. When Moses says, and when Yahuwah warns, get them inside, I better do it. So they did. Those that brought their animals and their servants in, and made them flee into indoor places, they were saved. As for those that didn't regard the word of Yahuwah and left his servants and his cattle out in the field, they died. Yahuwah said unto Moshe then, stretch forth your hand towards the heavens, Hashemayim, that there may be hail. in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast, upon every herb of the field, throughout the land of Egypt. Moshe stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and Yahuwah sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down upon the earth, and Yahuwah caused that hail upon all the land of Egypt. Now, as I listen to this, I'm going to point out something that I tend to emphasize this a bit different every pass through, because there's so much here. There are so many patterns and repeating patterns that it's kind of fun to go into detail and study them at some length. And given that this is a fairly lengthy parsha, we don't have time to do it in the detail that I think it should merit. But it's interesting. And I think most everybody that's been listening and has been through the Torah a couple times probably understands this. But each one of these plagues is being visited by the real Elohim against the fake Elohim, the fake gods. The Nile River, they held up as a god. And they got, frog worshiping and all these other things that are going on. So pick a thing that they called a god, and essentially what you have is the Creator holding it up and saying, ha ha, you think this is a god? Let me show you. A, I'm going to make you sick of it, and B, I'm going to show you it's not a god at all. Now, what was interesting about this particular plague is that both fire and ice were considered gods and symbols of gods, and they were considered to be, by the Egyptian mythology, they were considered to be at war with one another. Right? Fire and ice were enemies. And yet, how is it? Answer, this is a real god making a point. How is it fire and ice are going to come out of the same storm? So there was fire and hail. Flashing up amidst the hail, lots of fire, lightning. Very grievous, such as not been seen in the land of Egypt since it became a nation. So the opposing gods battling it out, but the real God is making his point. Ki ani Yahuwah. And the hail smote throughout the land of Egypt, all of it. Everything that was in the field, both man and beast, died. He smote every herb of the field and broke every tree that was out there. Only though up in the land of Goshen, right, where there was that land, that distinction that was being made, that separation, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail. So Pharaoh sent, he calls for Moshe and Aaron, and he said to them, now this sounds like, I guess it sounds a little bit like what we'd find in the whore church, right? A little bit of repentance. I'm sorry. I've sinned. I won't do it no more. Except for what? That's not true. I've sinned this time, he said. Yahuwah, he is righteous. He is Zadikah. And I and my people, we're the wicked ones. Sounds like he's gotten it, but we know what's going to happen, don't we? So entreat Yahuwah, and we've had enough of this. Let this be an end to these mighty thunderings and hail, and I'll let you go. You don't have to stay anymore. Moshe said to him, as soon as I'm gone out of the city, I'll spread forth my hands unto Yahuwah, and when we're out of the city, right, the thunders will cease, there won't be any more, so that you may know that the earth is Yahuwah's. Now, as for you and your servants, I know, I already got the answer. You are not yet going to fear Yareh Yahuwah Eloheka. And the flax and the barley, it says, were smitten because the barley was in the aviv, or in the ear. The barley was in the phase where it's almost ready to be harvested. The flax was in bloom. But the wheat and the spelt, they were not smitten. They survived because it was early. They ripened later on. So this is telling us something that is going to pan out and be important, obviously, when we get to memorializing this via the Passover. So Moshe went out of the city from Pharaoh. He spread forth his hands unto Yahuwah, and, just as he promised, the thunders and the hail ceased, and the rain was not poured out upon the earth. This all sounds pretty good. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunders were ceased, he sinned some more. He went back on his word yet again. Oh, guess what? And hardened his heart, he and his servants. So he hardened his heart. And the heart of Pharaoh, in fact, was hardened. Now notice in this case, we're going to get, he made his heart stubborn. And then it says, the heart of Pharaoh and his servants, it was, in fact, made chazak, strengthened too. And nope, he didn't let the children of Israel go, exactly as Yahuwah had spoken by Moshe. So there are several interesting contrasts in here. And by the way, that is the last portion of the portion, the last portion of the Parsha. It ends at the end of chapter 9, and we're going to see the final plagues in the Parsha next week. But I do think that it's kind of important to summarize what we're seeing in here, this whole idea of by my name, Yahuwah, I did not make myself known to them, even though his name appeared 165 times in Genesis, and he did. He did at least tell Abraham and Yitzhak his name. They heard it, but he did not do whatever it is he's doing here. Well, what is he doing? He is not only making his name known, he is demonstrating something that is really key. Now, I like some of the sages and the midrash that you'll see about this. And essentially, what does that mean? And here is a way that I've seen it phrased that I think is really pretty apropos. Never before had any of the fake gods done anything even remotely like what the real one true God is doing here. And that's the following. He is making my name known, as he said, and he is literally intervening in history. So up until this point, you've got gods of the harvest and gods that are, you know, going to help make it rain or whatever the case may be. But here is a creator of the universe coming to manifest himself. You will know my name. You will know Ki Ani Yahuwah. And he is literally doing a new thing. He is intervening in history. And what he is showing here, if you will, is keeping faith as well. I made a promise. I am keeping the promise. And even to the extent that that means intervening in history and at least giving the appearance of even circumventing what have been called the natural laws, the laws of nature. So a fascinating element. And I think if there's anything that we should take from this, it's this understanding of how vitally important it is to know what it means when he says, Ki Ani Yahuwah. This is the promise-keeping, covenant-keeping Elohim who has a name that represents his character of keeping faith and honoring his promises to the point where he changes history itself.
Or more accurately, intervenes.